My name is Rachel Rofe. I created the show because I wanted to help you see that if you have a choice, you can choose a better life. If you're listening to this podcast, you're in a pretty fortunate position. You have free will, ability to connect to the internet, and access to all kinds of new education. This podcast is meant to help you make the most of your good fortune. We talk with all kinds of people here from all walks of life because I want you to see that no matter what your situation, there's always a way to create a life that you're proud of. Hello, so welcome to today's episode. Today I talk with Thais, who is a super vibrant woman, and we talked a lot about, and this was mostly about women stepping up into leadership. So sorry guys, she works specifically with women. You can of course still listen and learn from it, but I think it's going to be especially helpful, this call for women. And we just covered all kinds of things. So we went over what leadership means, if everybody is a leader, distinguishing with intuition, with the differences between fear and intuition. And Thais had some really interesting perspective on what happens when obstacles come into your life and how to handle that. And are they really even obstacles, or are we just trying to get too much control? So that's been really interesting for me to hear about. We talked about sisterhood and just a whole bunch of different things around just being your most vibrant, alive self and being that leader that Thais says that everyone, and I totally agree, that we are all leaders in a different capacity. And so really just stepping up into that. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope that you get a lot out of it just like I did. All right, here we go. Okay, so thank you so much for being here, Thais.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So the intention behind A Better Life is to show people that if they have a choice, they can choose a better life. So in that spirit, can you take a minute to share with us some of the things that you're most proud of in your life?
Of course. So I would have to say the thing that I am absolutely most proud of is being an entrepreneur. I think it takes a lot of courage and strength to not only listen to the calling of the spirit, but to also act on it. And taking that leap for me at the time that I did was going against everything that I had defined myself as, because I thought I was going to go to law school. I mean, I took my LSATs, I interviewed lawyers, I was definitely on that trajectory. And I excelled in school, so I figured it makes sense to go into something that required more schooling. And I thought that I would only succeed in life if I had that extreme structure where, you know, you could only move up one ladder rung at a time, and that's that. So when the calling that came to me to become a coach and get into the coaching and yoga world and to empower women, when that calling started to get stronger and stronger, I initially faced a lot of inner resistance, which came in the form of other people doubting me. So I would have to say, Rachel, that my ability to continue to honor my calling and do the inner and outer work to manifest my work and this entrepreneurial path has been such a grace for me, and I'm really proud that I had the courage to listen and to take action.
Good for you. So when was that you decided that you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
This was back in, 2010 was when I was introduced to yoga, and that's what completely changed my path of going into law. Once I started doing yoga, which for me was extremely woo-woo and weird, and I didn't know what it was all about. And I went to a power yoga class because I was bored, and I felt maybe this would be a nice hobby to pick up, and at least I would get some exercise in. And when I went, and it completely changed my life, I knew that I needed yoga, and I needed to do something with yoga. And so that was a door that opened for me to begin to look at the path of the holistic coaching and yoga and health and wellness, empowerment, all that good stuff. So yeah, it would be 2010. And then I got my certification to coach in 2011.
Wow. So what was it about yoga that was so changing for you?
You know, up to that point, I led a very intellectual life. I considered myself to be pretty intelligent, and that was how I defined myself, was by my intelligence. And it was working out, or so I thought, but I was extremely disconnected from my body. I think that that's how a lot of us kind of walk through life, thinking that we can just power through with the power of our mind. So there was a lot of disconnection there, which led to some pretty serious binge eating issues and emotional eating issues. So when I was introduced to yoga, a friend told me about yoga. She's like, I love it. You should try it out. And so I went to a class. And for the first time, Rachel, for the first time, I checked into my body. And there was something there. It felt like home. And it wasn't some big aha moment that changed my life. It was just a very quiet, oh my gosh, there's something here. And I have to explore what that is.
That's interesting. That's really, really interesting. You're making me want to get back into yoga again.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. And it's not just for me. When I started getting into yoga and the asana, the physical practice of it, I realized that that's just the gateway drug. You know, that just gets the adrenaline rushing and the endorphins, and that makes you feel good. That sets up the stage for something even deeper. And that's a really strong meditation practice.
So you meditate as well?
Yeah, I teach meditation. I meditate every day, not as often or as long as I would like, but I'm working on that. But meditation, what I found with meditation is that it allows us to start to notice the thoughts in our mind. I think a lot of times we take the thoughts in our mind for granted, and we think that the thoughts in our mind are real. We think that they're true, that they are something to be listened to. Because why would we have thoughts if they weren't real? Like, the idea that we're lying to ourselves doesn't really seem like a logical conclusion. You have thoughts because they stem from you, and therefore they're real. And meditation allows us to start to see what our thoughts are doing and come into that place of awareness of, wow, there's a space here between these thoughts that are going through my head and then the me. So what is that me? And that is what meditation allows us to do, is to get into the what is me and why are these thoughts running my life and not me.
So what does meditation look like for you? Like, how do you do it?
So initially it started with just yoga. I remember when I was little, cause my mom has always been in the spiritual realm, and she's always been doing yoga and meditation for as long as I can remember. And I remember when I was like 7 years old and she wanted me to meditate with her, and I would sit there and I had no idea what I was supposed to do. So I would imagine trying to make the back of my eyes black. Like, I would try to like really hold on to this black thing. And it was the weirdest experience for me. And I realized, okay, maybe this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. And then I would just start getting loud and annoyed, and my mom would let me go. But as I grew older and started getting into yoga, I realized that meditation doesn't have to be this very structured, scary concept. It can be as simple as just noticing the quality of your breath and just noticing what's coming up and noticing the body. And seeing if you can kind of distance yourself from your thoughts. So it started with yoga, and then it led me to chanting, actually. I started doing chants with Krishna Das. He's a pretty famous Western chant leader. And that kind of also continued to get me deeper into yoga and meditation. And then I realized that meditation can kind of give you the high if you do it in a consistent basis that yoga does. And so then you just continue to get deeper and deeper into your practice, and there's a real sense of peace in there.
Yeah, so when you say, like, you pay attention to the quality of your breath, what does that mean for you?
Sure. So often I see my students when they come into meditation to change the breath. So the minute we start to bring awareness to something, we want to change it. And when we look at our breath, we start to think, oh, well, it needs to be deeper, because my yoga teacher told me that I have to have deep breaths and I have to use, you know, all parts of my lungs, and therefore I'm going to deepen my breath. And so we start to manipulate our experience. And that's very typical of what the mind does, is try to manipulate our experience. So when we can just bring our awareness to the breath and just the quality of it, is it short? Is it long? Is it deep? Is it shallow? Just notice what it is instead of trying to change it. The breath naturally becomes deeper. You naturally start to get into a more quiet place without the forcing current of what we naturally think happens when we meditate.
Got it. And I mean, I guess it makes sense as well, just to even just focusing on the quality of your breath, it's going to get you out of your thoughts and out of everything that, like, mind chatter, and just start to get you in a kind of different perspective. So very powerful. So one of the big things I wanted to talk with you about is stepping into leadership. I know this is one of your sweet spot areas, is helping people step into that. So first of all, before we even get too into it, can you tell me what that means to you, stepping into your leadership?
Sure. So I believe that we are all here with the purpose to teach. Whether we know it or not, we're all teachers and we're all healers. So everything that you do, Rachel, is teaching people something. And everything that you do is healing in some capacity. It's either pulling you away from love or closer to love. So when I look at somebody next to me doing something, they're teaching me their story and they're teaching me how I should be leading my life. So if we can all step into a sense of I am an example and people are listening and watching me whether I know it or not, we start to take more responsibility for how we act and how we think. Mm. We are all role models whether we know it or not. And the more that we can step into that sort of leadership in our life, in our business, in everything we do, the more we can set that example and we become a greater person. We become whole and lighthearted and spacious in our lives because we are noticing that we are teaching people. We are affecting people with our actions, with our words. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. One question I have, you said that we're always healing, whether we're pulling away from love or towards it. So I'm curious how it's healing if it's pulling away from love.
Yeah. So, you know, they say a lot of times that fear is the opposite of love. So when we are walking away from love and towards fear, a lot of times we get very judgmental. Like, oh, this is fear. This is bad. This is wrong. I shouldn't be experiencing these things. I shouldn't be experiencing the anger and all those negative emotions that are associated with pulling away from love. And yet, all of our emotions are a part of the realm of the human existence. Right? Being angry, jealous, all these emotions are a natural part of being human. And the more we try to walk away from these negative emotions without noticing what they're telling us, the more we distance ourselves from ourselves and not become whole and integrated and that leader that we want to be. So negative emotions, I believe that everything that we do stems from something greater. So if we're experiencing a negative emotion, say anger, well, there's a reason for it. So instead of labeling, oh, I'm feeling angry, this, you know, we shouldn't be feeling this. If we can examine what that anger is telling us, why we're being scared, why we're pulling away, if we can notice that, the anger kind of dissipates and we can peel away the onion and get to the core of our emotions. And that's a sign, that's telling us something, that's healing, Rachel. Getting into that core of our emotion heals us. For example, if you're feeling angry because your friend got an opportunity that you wanted, if you can dig a little bit deeper, instead of pushing away the anger, ask yourself, why am I feeling angry right now? And notice that maybe it's because deep down you feel like you're not worthy of that opportunity and that you're not good enough. Well, now that is the place where you can start to heal it. Now that we know that that's how you're experiencing life, we can love it and we can shift it.
And how would you shift it?
Oh man, well, really, it depends on the person, I'd say. It depends on the circumstance. But it first starts by just developing awareness for it. So knowing that that's how you're feeling and then choosing to feel something different. So if you're feeling unworthy, if you're feeling like you've always experienced a sense of lack in your life, that everyone else gets opportunities that you don't, first notice that. See if you can have any sort of compassion for that place. Because a lot of times, those negative emotions are some things that happened when we were a little kid. Like if we had a sister who stole our toys and then we got in trouble for it, you know, that may create a sense of inferiority that we carry until adulthood. And now we're judging ourselves so harshly for something that we were just trying to do the best of when we were little, right? So if we can notice this sense of unworthiness and be okay with not changing it, just like the breath, right? Just like the meditation, just coming into a sense of, okay, this is here. What is it trying to tell me? Usually what we hear, if we can give it enough space, is that it's a calling for love and not love from anyone else but ourselves. So then we can choose different and we can choose to love that place within ourselves that's feeling unworthy. And this is really messy stuff that no one likes to do. No one likes to get into it because, one, it's pretty deep work, and usually we need the help of a community to do it with, you know, a coach or support system. And it's not glamorous because we're basically saying that this negative stuff is a part of who you are, and there's no guilt and shame around it. And I think so many of us have guilt and shame around our negative emotions. We feel like we have to hide it because we have this passion for perfection that's an illusion.
Good points. I'm so glad that we went down that section. Thank you so much. You speak so eloquently and you bring up such great, great points.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So back to the leader thing. So you think that everybody is a leader?
I do. I think everyone is a leader. And I don't mean a leader as in you have to run a company. I don't mean a leader as in, you know, you have to have a team of people working underneath you. I think you can be a leader as a janitor. I think you can be a leader as a dog walker. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. You can be a leader by the actions that you choose to take and the decisions that you choose to make and the stories that you choose to share and believe about yourself.
Absolutely. So what do you think about like followers? Like sometimes we're in follower capacity, sometimes we're in leadership capacity.
I think that we definitely can learn from other people and follow other people's teachings, and that doesn't take away our own sense of leadership. Here's an example. So we think that a person in leadership, let's say a successful person, a CEO, a Fortune 500 company, how would they act? Well, one thing that I'm pretty sure every successful leader, the way they act is that they have confidence. They have confidence in themselves because they know that in order for them to run a company, they have to exude a sense of confidence to have people follow them, right? So even if you are a follower, and let's say that you're not necessarily in a leadership position in your life, you can still create a sense of confidence within you that will empower other people to be in their greatness. Because when we can step into our leadership and into our greatness, into our full power and potential, we give other people permission to do the same. So if we can step into our confidence and do the work necessary to dissolve the fears and the lacks and the unworthiness so that we can fully step into all of who we are and our confidence and know that we're spirit and that we're co-creators, then everything we do stems from love. Everything we do has a ripple effect of love, whether that is collecting the trash and doing the dishes or leading a Fortune 500 company.
Got it. Gorgeous. So, you know, you share with me it's your purpose to empower women to step into power and purpose through coaching, mastermind retreats, speaking, and writing. So why those outlets specifically?
So I remember when I was a little girl and we went to the movie theater, and I can't for the life of me remember what particular movie this was, but I remember this experience so vividly where I got bored with the movie. I was little, it was boring, I don't know what was happening, and I decided I was going to run to the very front of the movie theater right underneath the screen and start dancing. And that's what I did. And looking back at it now, I can't believe I did that. But at the time, it felt like a very natural thing to do. Everyone was looking up ahead. They were looking at me. So clearly, this is the time to dance. And I think kids, we have this sense of fearlessness about getting up and telling the world what we're about. You know, we jump up on water fountains as things as high as we can get, and we dance. And we feel the sort of liberation of our heart to expand, show off and tell everyone that we're here. And it's such a beautiful joy. And as adults, we look at children with this beautiful adoration and naivete and innocence, right? So when we kind of get older and we learn what is correct and what is not correct in our society, I think we lose some of that joy. And I found a natural propensity to continue to stay up on stage and to continue to serve in a way that is in front of people. And I think that by doing that, by serving people in that way, I'm ultimately giving other people the permission to do the same. Because I think us women really need to step up. And when I say that, I don't mean because we've been held down by men. I don't like this idea that it's men versus women and that we have to step up in a way that overrules men. I think that men have their own oppression of sorts. And I love the men who are leading that charge of allowing men to feel emotions and be more feminine. And what I found my cause to be is to support women in stepping up into the confidence and into the clarity of sharing the message and being fully feminine. And if that means rocking the stage, that means rocking the stage. If that means coming into sisterhood in communities around the world, then that's what it means. I love women who are just dedicated to the cause and can really fully serve and be of service to the world. And I think that the stage is one of the best way to support and share that message.
Mm. And now for women who want to be of service, do you find like the women that you work with kind of know what they're here to do, or do you work with them to find what that is?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I think we are all very thirsty for why we're here on this planet. I think that's the type of knowledge that we're all very thirsty for. And I found that there's kind of two ways that I can look at it that kind of makes sense. One is I think we all have the same purpose, which is to heal and to love and to learn and to teach, to be teachers and leaders. And I think every single one of us shares that purpose. We're all in this human existence to become the most that we can be and to take the bold action necessary to be the best version of ourselves and to be happy and to be in love, which is what I think where our natural propensity is. And we just have a lot of ego and fear that gets us in the way of that. So that's, I believe, is our purpose. Everyone shares that purpose. And I teach my women through my program on what that looks like in their life and what keeps them from living that purpose. But then I also think that everybody has a calling. And that is different in the sense of a calling is some people may have a calling to be a photographer or a teacher in a school or a coach or, you know, selling crafts on Etsy. So I think we all have a talent that we're here to manifest and to create. And that, Rachel, I find to be more challenging for women because we have such a risk aversion to living our calling. Mm. I think with women, we tend to be very good at planning, and we want to make sure that all of our ducks are lined up in a row and everything is perfect and 100% prepared before we take the leap. And I think that that holds us back from truly living our calling. So yes, in my program, our programs and masterminds and retreats, we work on, some of the things that we work on is how do we get the courage to live our calling? Because I don't think we really doubt what our calling is. I think we just don't know how to live that out.
Yeah, that's a good point. So when you reached out, you had also talked about wanting to share what it means to be a true light worker. So what does that mean for you?
Yeah, so I love the idea of light and working with the light. I love the idea that we are light and that we always come back to light. So the reason why I love light is because I think we are, well, if we go back to like the caveman era, what really was the catalyst for our transformation as human beings was starting the fire, right? Because once we learned how to start fires, that's when revolution picked up and we were really able to become all of who we are. So there's something to say about that, that it was our ability to create fire and light that turned the revolutionary clock. And in the same sense, in a spiritual sense, I think it is by starting that light and igniting that light within us, that connection to God and the universal laws, that sets our revolution in our spiritual realm and gets us excited and ignited and purposeful and meaningful in our life and everything that we do.
Mm. So for people who feel like they have this calling within them and they want to be light workers or just share more love in the world, however they kind of, the language that they use, mm-hmm. You had a great blog post about differentiating fear versus intuition, which is something that I'm sure a lot of people are going to come up against. So can you just share more about that?
Sure. So it's funny because one of the things that I teach in my programs is to take massive action, because when we take a massive action, we quickly realize how debilitating fear is and how much fear runs our lives. So let's say that there's a cute guy across the bar from us and we want to talk to him. The minute we decide, I want to talk to him, fear comes up. And all we can think about is how there's no way in heck we're going to talk to him. It's completely ridiculous to go talk to him. Oh my gosh, we can't go talk to him. And then we start to think, wait a minute, is the fact that I'm having these thoughts, does that mean I'm not supposed to talk to him? Is this my intuition telling me not to talk to him? Now, I know this is a pretty silly example, but I think a lot of women can relate to wanting to do something. And then the minute we set the intention that we want to do that thing that gets us out of our comfort zone, we become afraid. And then we're so good at telling ourselves story about our fears that we tend to believe that this fear, maybe it's our intuition. And one thing that I've come to learn in my life is that intuition will never come to you in the form of negative emotion. Intuition is not going to come to you with fear-based and limiting-based thoughts that you're not going to succeed and you can't do it and you're going to fail and there's no way that you should be doing this. If intuition comes to you, it's going to come to you from a positive place, because intuition, what intuition really is, right, is our spirit talking to us, coming out of us, our soul reaching to us and giving us a thread of message. And because our soul is love and comes from total, pure love, fear doesn't exist in that reality. So when intuition comes and talks to us, it's never going to come from a place of fear. So when there is fear, like the silly example of going to talk to that boy, really cute guy across the bar, if fear comes up, that's when you know that it's just your ego trying to keep you small and safe, and that your spirit would never want that for you. Right? We're not here to play it safe. We're really not. We think, Rachel, that we're here in this life to be comfortable and to create circumstances that keep us comfortable and keep us safe. We do everything to be as safe as possible. We create enough income and money so that if anything were to happen, we would be able to afford it without having to worry about it. Right? We have insurance of every capacity so that if, God forbid, anything were to happen, we would be protected. Right? We have all these structures in place to keep us safe. And yet the growth, the magic, the calling of our soul is not in the safety realm, but in the uncomfortable realm, because that's when we can start to really realize what we're capable of and where our greatness lies, and how no matter the circumstance, no matter what is handed to you, you're going to be able to manage, not only manage, but thrive. And that's the intuition, that's the soul. And our responsibility is to get uncomfortable and to learn how to take massive action and look at fear in the eyes and be like, hey, I see you, and I'm going to choose not to listen to you, and I'm going to choose to talk to that boy, because the worst thing that can happen is him saying no. It's not even that big of a deal.
Yes, 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 for sure. Now, okay, so if the intuition is never going to come to you as a negative, then what do you think that your intuition would say if you see that cute guy across the bar and, like, it's not a good idea to talk to him?
Well, the question is, why would it not be a good idea? So if, let's say, that he's, like, a really bad person, you're going to feel that, and it's going to come, but it's not going to come from a negative emotion. It may come to you as an image of, oh gosh, like an image of him in like a devil's whatever. And that may elicit a negative emotion, and then the fear can step in. But intuition on its own isn't negative and isn't going to come to you in a negative way. Does that make sense? So it could elicit emotional response if you can catch it, but intuition on its own can't speak in negativity because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, so I guess how would you then differentiate between that emotional image? Would it be because it's an image versus like a feeling?
Exactly. So you would notice the image. You would see it. You would see the devil or the whatever, and then you would know, okay, that's my intuition. And look, now I'm resulting in a negative fear, but I'm going to choose not to act because, you know, my intuition told me otherwise.
Got it. And so fear comes up, let's say, and so is your, I guess, action step, like, are there things that you tell people to do to look fear in the face and do it anyway? I mean, that's certainly one way of doing it. Are there other, like, practices that people could try on?
Sure. You know, I think the most important thing that we can do is just to develop awareness of where we are and what stories we're telling ourselves. So there's a lot of work that we can do without taking action to overcome fear. And it starts by looking at why fear has come up and how it's serving us. Because fear is serving us. It just be not in a way that we want it to serve us. But for example, fear can come up when it wants to keep you safe, because it doesn't want you to get rejected, because being rejected really hurts and it doesn't feel good. So it's better to play it safe. And so that's what fear may be telling you. And so just by noticing that and developing awareness around that and asking the question, oh, hello, fear, what are you trying to tell me? Oh, you're trying to keep me small. Huh, well, now you get to make that choice. You develop the awareness and now you get to choose. Do you want to continue to serve the fear, or do you want to serve love and overcome the fear by taking action?
great point. And I love how it's like you still have the choice. It's not something where you have to constantly be in warrior mode.
Definitely not. There's a lot of femininity in this.